This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having seven kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
It's the best bits of the week with Morgan number two.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to the Best Bits podcast. I'm Morgan, and this is the part where I bring on another show member this weekend. I know I was by myself last weekend, and I was just chatting it up, sitting in a closet, but that's fine because this weekend I brought on Mike D. What's up?
I like sitting in closets too.
When people ask why, it's because it has the best non-echo situation.
Yeah, you clap and nothing reverberates.
Yeah, whereas if I sit at like my kitchen table, you hear everything that happens in there. So I was chilling in a closet last weekend recording the best bits, but I'm happy to be back with another show member, and that is Mike D this weekend.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be fun because we're kicking things off at the number seven spot. I reviewed Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which first I would like to know, what are your favorite movies from the 80s?
You know, the 80s, it's hard to pick a lot of favorite movies because I was born in 91. So a lot of that stuff seemed old to me, even though it didn't seem like that far. I mean, it's really not that long ago from when I was born. But I feel like 80s movies are just generally kind of cheesy and they're not my favorite.
They are pretty cheesy. If there's one thing I've figured out from the 80s in all of the movie assignments I've had is they are incredibly cheesy.
They are, but there is a charm to them. I would put Bill and Ted up there. You got to put Back to the Future, Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. I'm really big into the John Hughes movies. I think that kind of defined what 80s movies were to me. And then very few action movies that I like from the 80s, because again, it's just very much like shoot 'em up, classic, like cheesy lines.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to really get into 80s movies, but I would probably lean towards like the teen dramedies.
Love that. Breakfast Club is a great one.
Yeah, I think that is the best 80s movie. Well, Back to the Future is probably the best 80s movie, but I feel like just straight on like drama, I would put Breakfast Club.
Solid. I think there's Pretty Woman and Dirty Dancing also in the 80s as well.
Yes.
I think. So I would probably throw those in there too. But you are not a big rom-com guy.
No, and those thrived in the 80s.
I'm a big rom-com girl. That's why everybody keeps assigning me the comedies and action and adventure ones, because I have seen all of the rom-coms. So if you're wondering why I'm watching all the dude shows, it's because I've already seen the other ones.
I actually think Pretty Woman was 90.
Was it 90s? Yeah. Dirty Dancing was 80s though, yeah. I think, because of the big hair. And I just remember that one being a little bit older, but you may be right. I could look it up. There is a Google in front of but I'm not worried about it because you make all the games on the show, and I'm really excited about this because I put together movie trivia to quiz you on this weekend. Okay, so you quiz us and make our lives hard on there. I'm going to see if you can do all these.
I don't think I've ever played trivia on the show because of this reason.
I know, I'm ready. Okay.
All right.
What was the first feature-length animated movie ever released?
Ooh, ever?
Ever.
Feature-length animated movie. I would have to say probably in the 30s. So I would go Snow White.
You're right. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Is that 1939?
I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Listen, I just got the answer to the question here, Mike D.
What movie did Tom Hanks score his first Academy Award nomination?
It would have to be in the 90s. I get confused which one he got first. He crushed it in like 93, 94. I'm leaning towards Philadelphia because Forrest Gump was 94. So I'm going to go Philadelphia.
I don't have the boner sound, but no, that is wrong.
Okay, what was it?
It's Big.
Oh, he got a nomination.
Yeah, not a win, just his first ever nomination.
Oh, in my head, I was going which one he won for.
See, this is why trivia gets you.
This is why it's hard.
What was the name of the skyscraper in Die Hard?
I've actually seen this. It's in Los Angeles. I believe it was an old Fox building. I'm not sure what they turned it into now, but the name of it?
Yeah.
What was the freaking
Listen,
name
I went,
of it?
I went some hard ones because I was like, you know a lot of movie trivia.
I can picture it in my head. I've seen it in real life, but I don't know the name of it.
And I'm probably going to butcher this name, Nakatomi Plaza.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't know.
Hey, I had to go hard for you. I knew you would know a lot of the easy ones, so... What flavor of Pop-Tarts did Buddy the Elf use in his spaghetti in Elf the movie?
Oh, there was a specific flavor.
Yeah.
Trying to think of the flavor. I remember him putting the syrup on it. I want to say it was like that blueberry one. I can't really picture it, so I'm going to go blueberry.
Chocolate.
Oh, it was chocolate.
Remember all the chocolate things were in there? Just like way too much chocolate. It's okay. Hey, you got one
so far.
These
are tough ones.
I know. I had to dig deep. What pop vocal group performs at the wedding in Bridesmaids?
The Dan Band. No, wait. Oh, Bridesmaids. I was thinking my head immediately went to
This is what
the
trivia
hangover.
Does to you.
Yes. In Bridesmaids. What was the question again?
What pop vocal group performs at the wedding in Bridesmaids?
Was it ABBA?
Mm-mm.
They're just singing ABBA. Wow. Oh, my wife is going to kill me. That's her favorite movie. I'm going to go ABBA.
It's Wilson Phillips.
Oh, well, it is Wilson Phillips because mm-hmm. it's Hold On. See, even in my head, I knew what song it was mm-hmm. and I thought it was ABBA.
See, this is also what I want people to recognize. When you play a game, you're just like going out of memory, but also you just kind of lose everything.
Yeah, and your head just... It gets stuck on an answer, even though you know exactly what you're trying to say. Like, I knew that was Wilson Phillips, Hold On. I could sing that song. I can picture that scene. But in my head, it went to ABBA Dancing Queen.
Yep. I think that would have been Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Okay. This again, we're staying hard. What critically panned 1984 country musical comedy starring Dolly Parton and Sylvester Stallone became a cult classic?
Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, I did not know these two were in a movie together.
Yeah, that's crushing me. I think of Dolly. I think of 9 to 5. I think of Little Whorehouse. I can't think. I know I've heard her talk about Sylvester Stallone in an interview, but I can't think of the movie that they were in together. So I'll just say 9 to 5.
It's called Rhinestone.
Ah, yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever seen. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that one, no.
Yeah, I didn't know if you know this one. Again, I'm telling you, I had to pull out all the stops for this.
I got to go watch that now, though. That sounds amazing.
Right? Dolly Parton and Sylvester Stallone. Okay, what movie did Steven Spielberg win his first Oscar for Best Director?
I'm going to go with Jaws.
You sure about that?
Say that again.
What movie did Steven Spielberg, I said his name word, Steven Spielberg mm-hmm. win his first Oscar for Best Director?
For Best Director. My mind immediately goes to Jaws. Could be E.T. I'm sticking with Jaws.
Schindler's List.
Ah, the dark emotional route.
I'm getting you. I feel so good about this right now because you get me a lot in like a lot of the games. So in Risky Business,
mm-hmm.
what song did Tom Cruise famously lip sync to in his underwear?
Old Time Rock and Roll, Bob Seger.
Yeah, you got it. The second one.
There we go, too.
Who took over the role of Bruce Wayne's love interest, Rachel Dawes, in The Dark Knight after Katie Holmes exited after Batman Begins?
It was Katie Holmes, and then it went to Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Ding, ding, ding.
Got that one.
Woo. What is that, three now?
Three. Yeah. Up to three. Okay.
I think you're going to get these next two. I feel confident about these.
Okay.
What song plays over the opening credits of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, frick. Guardians of the Galaxy. It's... Hey, I can't think of the name.
Oh, yeah, you're there.
I know the song.
Hey, do what Amy does. Just keep singing, it'll come out.
Hey, what's... I can't think of the song title.
Come and get your love.
That's it. I couldn't quite get there.
You were there. The humming was there.
I was trying to think of that one. I get confused with part one and part two because they have a lot of great music in those movies. Yes, that is a song.
Solid one. I spoke too soon. I was pretty confident in you. Okay, if you don't get this one, I will be sad. What is the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time?
Joker.
Yeah.
I knew that one.
That's one of your favorite movies.
I would probably, given the day, I'd put it in my top 10.
Yeah. I was like, if he gets this one wrong, we probably got bigger issues. Well, there's your movie trivia.
That was tough trivia. I like it.
Right? I found a really solid list, but there was even older ones on there. And I was like, there's no way. You may be movie Mike, but these are some old questions. So maybe this becomes a thing that we do movie trivia.
I like it.
On you. And especially because you are the game expert. You're the one who comes up with all the games on our show. Mm-hmm. So I had to finally put you to the test.
Yeah, it's weird being on the other end. Just how your mind works of like, that's the answer, the only one I can think of.
Right? It's not very fun, is it?
Yeah, it's not. Now everybody's going to be like, you're dumb.
Every time. That's what happens every time. It's okay. Then at number six this week, Lunchbox, he did his Woodstock 69 report. And oh my goodness, this man is now obsessed with Woodstock.
Yeah.
And he is basically a number one fan of that whole historical event, even though he wasn't alive when it happened, right? He wasn't alive?
69? No.
I'm just making sure. I want to know what historical event you either really love or you're fascinated with or that shaped you.
For me, I think it was the creation of Vine. I feel like for our generation, like for millennials, whenever Vine came out, it changed the way I thought about comedy. It changed the way I thought about internet culture. Like YouTube had been around since like 2005. But there wasn't anything like super short form and accessible to people who just wanted to make quick, funny clips that it really just set like the groundwork for what TikTok is now.
Yeah, that's
so
for sure.
It's even weird for me now being in my 30s and feeling like Vine was so long ago and people like not remembering it and that kind of being an old thing now because it was so new and like groundbreaking when it came out that I realized like a lot of my humor, the way I approach the internet can all be like traced back to Vine. So I think if it wouldn't have been for Vine, I wouldn't have had any kind of approach to social media now and I wouldn't find things funny the way I do now. So there's like still like old videos that are still like embedded in my head because of Vine. So it's weird to look back on like 2016 as the good old days of the internet.
It was the good old days though. Do you see on TikTok now, I don't know if it's been popping up for you, but a lot of the Vine videos are starting to recirculate?
Yeah, I see the recirculation. And then there's like a small section of people who make content in that same kind of style.
Yeah.
I like the quick one-liner jokes that are dumb and ridiculous, but they make me laugh. And they're still out there. So I feel like there's still some people holding on to that.
Is there anyone you follow on TikTok that gives you those vibes that you really love?
No, not really. They're usually just random ones.
They just kind of pop up.
They just kind of pop up. I tend to not like follow people on TikTok a lot.
Fair.
And even when I do follow them, I'll follow them and then kind of forget about them. So I kind of just take my For You page and what's given to me just kind of comes day by day.
Isn't that funny? We used to be, especially with Instagram, so meticulous about mm-hmm. who we choose to follow and everything. And we still are on that app. But then you go to TikTok and it's like, I don't have to follow anyone. I can just go to this For You page.
Yeah, it's nice. It kind of feels like it takes that kind of pressure off mm-hmm. of social media where you're not following along somebody's like highlight reel. It's just like, hey, what's funny? What's interesting? What speaks to my interest? I think that's why I like it so much. It doesn't feel so forced. And when you have to make a video, you have to put yourself out there a lot more. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you get the more authentic versions of people instead of just like, here's a really nice edited photo of me.
That's true. And there's sometimes where I'll go on one and they'll have 300 million followers. And I'm like, where are all these people coming from?
Yeah.
Like, and then I remember that TikTok is all across the world. It's not just in the US. But it blows my mind when people have that many followers on TikTok.
It is insane.
So that one is funny. I would say mine would stay in technology too. The invention of the iPod. Mm-hmm. That was a game changer for me because, yes, I knew about Walkmans and I knew about cassette players and all of that, but I never used it very much. So the iPod for me would have been the first time that I could have a handheld listening device where I could get all my music. And I remember I used to download my favorite TV show episodes when it finally started to expand into that realm. So I remember like sitting on my little iPod at school and watching a TV episode while I'm sitting at the locker or listening to my favorite song because I finally could. Those were my favorite like times when the iPod came out.
If you were to pull out your first iPod ever, what three songs would be on it?
Oh, man. I don't even know because I'm thinking about like back then, maybe one that definitely comes to mind is Keyless Milkshake, I think is that her name. That song was the highlight of basically 10 years of my life. And then a lot of dance songs similar to that because we would always do party buses or hang out in these big groups and people would have the playlist, and it was always those songs. It's not like we were sitting there listening to country music at a dance party. Mm-hmm. So those were most of my songs on there because I wanted to be the cool kid that had good music, though I never listened to it by myself. It was just when I was at those places. Though Shania Twain was definitely on my playlist of all types. I would even play her at the dance parties. So she's been one on there forever. Just all Shania Twain, basically.
It's all of it. I never had an iPod.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that because of just the way you grew up or was that you didn't want one?
Couldn't afford one.
I wonder.
We didn't have a computer until like way late. So never had the iPod. I had like the CD player.
Yeah.
And then I had like a very like rudimentary MP3 player, but it didn't really work at all. So a lot of mine was just like CDs. Like I still had CDs until like the late 2000s because never had an iPod.
I mean, isn't that so interesting how the course of your life is shaped in different ways?
Yeah.
How mine's an iPod and yours is a stereo system and a CD player. Do you still have any of those CDs?
I don't think I have them anymore. I think I got rid of them like a long time ago.
Dang, those could have been some big money for you. Like the Pokemon cards, those could be making a comeback.
I know, I could have kept them all. I do have records though. I did collect a lot of records.
Vinyls?
Yeah.
So did you also listen to vinyl then too, or was that not? I don't know if that was as common because I never really listened to vinyl.
It was because I was into punk rock growing up and I think vinyl is cool now to like everybody. Like even country artists now are putting out their albums on vinyl. But back in the day, it was a lot cheaper to make. So bands would make vinyl records, like the full really big album ones. But then even like the singles would be like on a smaller record. So it was always a part of the way I consume music. I would go to a show and buy the actual record and go home and listen to it. And that's just always how I listen to music. So I still have those from back in the day from like probably early 2000s. Like I've just collected it for a long time now. So that would kind of be my way to go.
You were cool before it was cool. That's what I'm hearing.
I just like collecting things. Going back to like the Pokemon card things, like I like collecting rare things. And for the bands I listen to, they would put out like different versions of their albums. Like the very early pressings, they'd make like 100 copies that are a certain color. The next 200 are a different color. So it was kind of like a collection process of like trying to get the most limited edition, but then also having all my favorite records to listen to.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, speaking of your punk rock days, you and I had both posted the latest TikTok trend right now, which is basically showing your teenage dirtbag face.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term, that's just a song that goes along with it. But yours is amazing. And it showed like a whole side of your life that we see at moments now because you'll go to these shows and stuff. But what were your big phases growing up?
I probably my earliest phase was just punk rock. Like I was just a punk kid. And I always kind of got lumped in with the emo kids, even though I wasn't ever that emo. But I was colored hair. At one point, I convinced my parents to let me have a mohawk. I would wear... I couldn't afford the stuff from Hot Topic, so I would make my own versions of clothes. I'd go to, like, flea markets, thrift stores, and get, like, old jackets, cut off the sleeves, put on, like, buttons of my favorite bands, spikes, those kinds of things. So I had just a punk rock phase where, I mean, that's what I looked like. I played in bands growing up. So I wasn't like the cool kid of like, you think of punk rockers being kind of cool at school. Like I wasn't. I was always like the outsider, didn't have a whole lot of friends. And I feel like the emo kids were kind of the cooler popular ones now, which is weird for me because I feel like that type of music is having kind of a revival right now of people remembering all those emo bands. But I was like, those were all the cool kids in high school. Like no one was hanging out with me. Like I was just the colored hair kid in eighth grade.
What do you think is the difference between emo band and a punk rock band?
So emo, I feel like emo was a lot more commercially successful. Emo got played on the radio. Punk rock didn't. Punk rock never really had the biggest commercial success outside of like Green Day and Blink 182. And there were some other like pop punk bands, but the stuff I listened to was never played on MTV. It was very underground, very kind of what is described as like DIY, very like it's a band getting in a van, touring around the country, playing club shows. So it was very like they kind of like didn't look, they kind of looked down on the stuff they got successful. I think that's why I grew up that way because I didn't like the bands that were popular. I liked the bands that felt like they were more personal to me. Which now looking back on it, I'd rather those bands have been more successful. But yeah, that's what was the difference. It was just a lot more underground.
Yes. And being also underground, another, I guess you could say group of people that were like that were kind of the skaters.
Yeah.
Were you ever a skater dude?
I did have the skating phase. I like started skateboarding in like sixth grade. Like me and my cousin did, but he broke his ankle.
Oh, no.
Like within, I would say the first couple of weeks we started skating together. And then my mom was like, you're not skating anymore. So I had to stop skating for a while. And then I skated later, like in college again.
Yeah.
And then just recently gave it up for good.
Yes. I remember us talking about this, but I've also seen your pictures you've posted with your skateboard. So yeah. That's why I was curious if you actually had a phase back in the day.
Yeah, for a very brief time I did. And I always kind of associated myself with that skateboard culture. People would assume I was a skater kid, even though I didn't skate a whole lot. But I still love it. I love like even just following along with it now. It was like, I wasn't really into other kinds of sports growing up as far as like watching football, basketball, anything like that. I would watch a lot of like X Games. So I followed along with it more than I did actually like skating.
So did you love Tony Hawk?
Yeah, he's okay. Like one of my heroes. I played the video game nonstop. I wanted to be like him.
Yeah, I feel like I knew a lot of kids growing up that wanted to be like Tony Hawk. That was a very popular person and phase for people.
Yeah, I was definitely a part of that.
I didn't ever have an emo phase. I did have lots of layers phase where I just wore multiple layers. Still don't understand why we ever did that. Okay, that was a big one. And I wore dark eyeliner and colored eyeshadow. Also don't know why we did that. A lot of the phases that I did, I will never understand why we did. I fake baked, so I looked super orange and I had bright blonde hair. Just terrible. And then you add in the dark eyeliner. I did kind of look pop punk, but it was not a good pop punk. It was like the broken orange one. And that was a bad phase. All of mine were pretty on trend with what was happening in the 90s and the Y2K era that we see making a comeback. But listen, I did wear low-rise jeans. I was watching all of my photos. I wasn't watching them. I was looking at all of my photos And the fact that I even could wear low-rise jeans once upon a time seems like a foreign idea to me. Like, that's not me. There's no chance, because...
So it wouldn't bring those back.
No, those are gauchos. Those are the two things. I swear, if we try and bring either one of those back, which I know low-rise jeans are trying to make a comeback, but I'm going to hold out on those forever. It's just, they were not a good look. I look at those photos and I am so sad that I dressed myself that way. those are a bunch of my phases, but I never really went into a particular phase. It was just kind of following the trends mm-hmm. that you'd see in magazines, because back then it's not like we had social media to go off of. MySpace started to become a thing, but we had magazines, and you paid attention to all the 17 magazines or Glamour or whatever was happening in those. And of course, those aren't actually real for real people, but we were still following them. And I looked back at all of those photos and I loved them. Because obviously, you know, those shape who you are and that's who you become. So you love them. But man, I wish somebody along the line like Bill and Ted would have came from my future and been like, girl, you got to stop.
If you had to be assigned a clique in high school, if someone said, type of kid were you in high school? What would it be? Because you also, did you do cheerleading in high mm-hmm. school?
I did. I was a cheerleader in high school, but cheerleading is also how all my bullying stuff happened through cheerleading. So I never really took on that identity. I didn't like it. I really was like a social butterfly because I hung out with theater kids. I was also a baseball manager at one point in time. I was a cheerleader. I did... the broadcast journalism program.
You're all over the place.
I really never fit into, I was what you would call floater. I never identified with one. And I even hung out with a lot of what you would potentially call emo people too. And I loved a lot of different people. I felt like my identity was never supposed to be attached to one. It was supposed to be all over. Because I also, at one point, when I was looking back at these photos, I was the president for... an organization that basically did all this volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And those were a different type of people too, because those were, you know, at the time when you're young and dumb, people who volunteer are losers and they don't have other things to do or whatever. So, but I loved that work and I became the president of that club. That's how much I loved it. And I was also the president of French Club. I'm telling you, Mike D, I had so many hats that I wore in like from middle school to junior year when I left and finished high school at home. So I really never fit into one, even though you can look at my pictures and say I was a cheerleader and probably look like I fit into that mold. I really didn't. That just never fit for me.
That's crazy. That's a lot of things to do in high school.
I did. I also was trying to just figure out all my different interests and I wanted to explore them all. And, you know, thankfully my parents encouraged that and wanted me to do that because... otherwise, I probably wouldn't have figured out what I wanted to do very quickly and very early on. So I do. I think about that often. That the volunteer one, I even went to a camp. That's how much I loved that.
Into volunteer camp?
Yeah. It was a leadership camp. And basically, you did volunteer work. You got to know each other. You'd do all these different events to find and meet people from other areas of the state, too. It was just like it was in a camp for adults. So not like church camp where you had like a purpose of, you know, going to church and that is kind of the purpose of it. This one was more of a purpose of just hanging out, learning how to be a leader and meeting other people and mingling. Maybe that's where a lot of my social skills came from.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I'm not really sure, but I forgot about all of those things that I did until I started going through my freaking Facebook albums.
I should have done more things in high school, sounds like.
Man, Mike. Yeah. So no, I really didn't have one. But it's also cool to have one. People have one and then they have it. At least they had an identity then. I really was a little floater social butterfly. No, that was me. At least you had yours. You know who you were then.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure it out.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of seven kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This week on the show at number 5, we talked about the interventions we would have for ourselves after a news story came out. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but it's Kaylee
Cuoco.
She's in Big Bang Theory, which also great TV show. Did you ever watch that?
I watched it early on and I'll watch like random episodes when it comes on. I like it.
Yeah, it was a good one and I loved her in it, but she came out and said that she had had an intervention for herself after her divorce because she was in a really low place. And so it caused us all to talk about it. And mine was sugar, which has always been a really hard habit for me to kick, and it will continue to be. If you had to have an intervention for yourself, Mike, what would it be?
I mean, mine is probably also working too much.
We have a problem on this show.
Yeah.
You and Bobby, I could probably add that one to my list, but I think sugar has been harder for me, so I'll stick with that one, because while I'm working so hard, I go and find sugar. But yeah, so why do you think it's working so hard?
I have like this thing of like, even if I have downtime, if I'm not doing something, I feel like I'm wasting time, and I feel like that's a problem. I feel like I could work on that. Like, I feel the need to, we are so busy all the time with our jobs and there's always something we could be working on. And I feel like I should take that time when I don't have anything to be okay. Mm-hmm. And know that it's okay, that I can go do something else, do something that like rejuvenates me or help, doesn't have to help me. It could just be me turning off my brain and enjoying something and not having to fill it with work.
Well, yeah, because you are the same guy who loved watching movies that you turned it into work.
Yeah.
That was your thing that you liked to do.
I try to find ways to, yeah, how could I turn this into something else?
You got to find another thing because you loved movies. You love running. You have not turned running into work.
That is why I also won't do races or marathons anymore, because I feel like if I add that element of I'm running for a reason, I'm running to train for something, that it will start to feel more like I'm doing it for a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the one marathon and haven't done another one since. Unless there's like a really big cause that I'm behind that I want to pursue, I don't think I'll ever do a formal race again.
That's probably a really good idea, Mike, to not make that work as well.
Because then I'd probably do another one and be like, well, I could get a better time or I could raise more money, and then it'd be a whole other thing.
Yeah. Okay, so you got running. What are some other things you'd like to explore that you can't make work?
Probably art.
Yes, we talked about that one. Did you do some more art?
I've done a little bit.
Okay.
And it's mainly just like me having any kind of free time, but it also still feels like I'm creating something. So it doesn't feel like I'm wasting time. but nothing that I'm proud of yet. So that's kind of just my fun hobby.
You don't have to be proud of it. And maybe if you continue to just be having fun with it, you can't make it work.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to leave that one as.
That is my one, yeah.
So basically what just happened is we had an intervention for you.
That was my intervention.
Yeah, you were bringing it up for yourself, but then I just made you have it instead.
Probably before that, though, it was probably partying.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But you don't drink much anymore, do you?
No, but I think the reason I was so like unhealthy for a while is because I did like to party.
And when you say you like to party, what did that look like for you?
It wasn't like a social thing. It was just like me and like my family, small group of friends would just drink every weekend. And that was a part of my life for a while. And it just led me to a place that I didn't really like. And I realized like I didn't need it anymore. So once I realized like how unhealthy it was making me just on like the drinking side, and that would also lead to me not making the best decisions with what I was eating and ultimately not feeling like I was even myself anymore because of my weight, that I made that decision to completely kind of change everything.
And you now introduce, like, I have seen you have a beer or something yeah. every now and again. So you took it out to accomplish that goal, but now it's kind of been reintroduced.
Yeah, because I can control it now. Like, I know, like, that I can have a couple and be fine and not have it like creep back in like it used to be.
Yeah.
And it's just like a fun social thing now. Like if there's a situation that calls for it, yeah, it's fine.
Do you feel like if you were back home with your family and stuff that you would fall back into that? Because is that a way to bond with your family?
Yeah, I think that's kind of our default, like with any family get together, even as a kid. I don't know if it's like a Mexican culture thing, but there was always just beer around and it was always just like any social situation like that called for it. So I felt like as I got out of it, my family, especially like my dad, like that's kind of a thing we bond over.
Yeah.
It was hard for him to realize like I didn't want a beer that because he likes to just make sure everybody has something to drink, make sure everybody's comfortable. And whenever you tell him no, he kind of is like, wait, what's going on? Like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
I think later and now he kind of realizes it and realized I did it for my health and I did it to, you know, just be better overall. That when I go back home, it doesn't feel like there's that pressure anymore. But I'm also like in a point now to where, yeah, like I want to enjoy these moments. I want to enjoy life. So I can have a couple every now and then.
Yes, you found your perfect balance. Before, it sounds like it was the easy thing to choose.
Yeah, it was just kind of like without thinking I did it. So yeah. I would realize, why am I doing this all the time?
No, and in true Mike fashion, working hard, you're like, I'm going to change this.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome. I mean, we really did just have an intervention for you.
Weird.
I'm sorry, that was not my plan. I just meant to ask about it. You know, we're going to keep moving on because we did have our lottery winners on the show this week. They won $1 million after being inspired by the show. They heard us talking about the Mega Millions and decided to buy a ticket. Well, they won $1 million. So we brought them on to talk about it. Have you, Mike, in your life ever won anything?
I played a scratch off once and I won $100.
Hey, that's a pretty good scratch-off.
That's the most I've ever won. And after that, I was like, I don't think I'm going to win again, so I'm probably not going to play anymore. I just like to think about it. Like, I'll drive by the sign for the lottery, and, you know, it says however many million it is. I like to fantasize about it, but I'm never really inclined to go get a ticket anymore.
Right. So when Lunchbox kept talking about it on the show, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just go buy a ticket.
Oh, I was so close that time.
You really did like do a good job of convincing people to buy a ticket because he's not wrong. That's a lot of money that could change your life.
Yeah.
But then the one time I decided to put money in our little pot thing on the show, I think they ended up doing it like 5 or 6 times. I did it one time. And when we lost, I was like, dang, I'm never getting that money back.
It's gone.
And I got really sad. Just like when I go to a casino, I don't know if you're like this as well. I will only bring $20.
Mm-hmm.
And once I lose that $20, I'm out. Like,
yeah,
there's
the
no going back.
I budget for it.
Yes. I'm not good about losing or wasting money. I try to be very vigilant about not spending my money on things that's not
mm-hmm.
going to benefit me in some way. and like a casino or gambling, that makes me feel like a crappy person. Yeah.
I just see it for the entertainment value. I never approach it as like, this is my way to make money. This is going to change my life. I just see it the same way I would spend money for like a ticket to a show or just something that I'm going to enjoy. Like, that's my entertainment value. I'll set aside this amount for it. After that's gone, that's it. I lose it all. I was already just accounting for it.
That's true. But even still, even when I account for it, I'm like, dang, I just lost $20 for no reason. So those make me sad. I've won twice in my life. That was really exciting. I called into a radio station when I was, I think, maybe seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And I won tickets to a Keith Urban show.
Nice.
Which was pretty awesome. I couldn't contain my excitement. So when they were asking me all my details, I was just like screaming. I didn't really know what to do because I didn't think I could possibly get through the radio. So that was pretty cool. And obviously cool now that I'm in radio and I've gotten to meet and see Keith Urban in studio. A full circle moment. And then I won free sandwiches for a year in college, which was epic for a college student.
That's like the perfect prize.
Yes, it was amazing. We had a journalism open house. And in that, they did a raffle, and I put my ticket in the raffle. And when they called it, I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's no way. There's no way that's my ticket. Sure enough, and I got so many free sandwiches that year. It was great as a freshman college student.
Have you ever won anything or entered into something that you made, like you actually had to make something to compete in? Because I remember the one thing that I wanted to win in high school was there was like a music video competition for like a media class. And it was like this big event where everybody who made a video, we like showed them all at one, like on one night. And then there were judges and they rated them. And I worked so hard on this thing and I got second place. And like, I've never lived that down. Like, I've always like, man, how did I not get first place?
Who got first place?
I don't even remember. I just remember coming in second, and I think the prize was like some random $100 gift card, but I just wanted the joy of winning first place.
Yeah, and it was a video competition?
Yeah, we all had to make like music videos to like our favorite songs.
What was your music video?
I made one for this band called Sundowner, and it was called This War Is Noise, so I like filmed all around my town. I got like some friends to be actors in it, and I worked really hard on editing. I think that's where like my early kind of fascination with like multimedia came into place.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna win. Like, this is the best thing I've ever made. I worked so hard on it. And it was like the only like one of the first times I felt proud of something that I had made. Like, my brother went with me and we sat there and watched. We're like, dude, I'm gonna win. And then they didn't pick me.
Dang.
So,
and that has stuck with you.
Yeah, that is the one thing I remember at my time at Waxahachie High School.
Oh, that's a bummer to remember, Mike. Do you think you can find the music video and post it now? Is it somewhere?
Oh, yeah. I think I still have it maybe on like an old YouTube channel.
I feel like you need to post that because it could be your revival for not getting first place. You could post it on social media now. Maybe it'd be really awesome. There are old school music videos that go viral on TikTok.
It's true.
So this could be your moment.
Repost.
Maybe that's why you didn't get first place, is so you could post it now and get first place in life.
Maybe that's it.
that's what I'm going with. I'm sticking to that story. You know, I never made anything to win something, but I did back when I wanted to be a singer, which still makes me laugh. I did perform in a talent competition. I sang Kelly Pickler's Red High Heels and I got first place.
First place.
I did. So I'm telling you, I didn't used to be as bad as I am now. Like, I did have some skill, enough to win a talent show in sixth grade with Kelly Pickler's Red High Heels.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I did. I even wore red high heels. I bought them for my performance.
I was always scared to be in a talent show. Like,
I was terrifying.
I wanted to so bad, but I was like, nah, I can't do it.
No, it was terrifying. And I'm so glad. I think maybe in some camera video roll in my parents' basement, there is clips of it, but that is all that exists. There's nowhere else out there that they exist. So that would have been another one. I had some, yeah, just random wins in my life. It seems like each kind of phase in my life, I had a random win.
Dang.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to you posting your viral video.
I'll have to find it.
I believe in you.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of seven kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
There was some blind karaoke on the show this week. The show members sang One Hit Wonders. Now, that was really fun and a really cool segment you should listen to if you go check out Best Bits, Just the Bits. It's on there. But Mike, you performed this past weekend, not in blind karaoke.
No.
But you opened up for Bobby. How did that go?
It went pretty well. Haven't performed in like a couple years now.
Because of the pandemic, right?
Pandemic shut things down. Comedy's hard to do for the first time again because it's, you don't really know if anything's good until you do it. And I've been writing for like the last year now, kind of coming up with my next set of material. But it's not until you get out there and start talking and all the little punchlines you worked on, seeing how people react to them, that you're like, oh man, that's not working. That's not any good. Throw that out. So overall, it went pretty well for the first time back. It just felt good again. And there's just kind of a rush that you get when you walk out on stage and you have no instrument to lean on, nobody else next to you. It's just you staring at the faces of people and hoping that they laugh. And for me, like, I'm a pretty quiet, reserved person outside of that. But for some reason, when I get out on the stage, a switch kind of goes off in my brain. And like, that doesn't scare me. Getting in front of like entire theater of people, like, that's easy for me. Like, when it's 10 people and I have to give a presentation, I'm out on that. Like, I can't do that. But whenever I go out and I know I've worked hard on this material, I know what I have to do to get laughs. It just feels like a rush I can't get anywhere else. So overall, I think this past weekend went pretty well. There's still a lot of things that I'm working on and trying out that for the next time we do it, I think it'll be a lot better. But it felt good. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing quite like doing something and working on something and having people laugh. That's like the best feeling for me, especially because with all the things I work on for the show, it's mainly behind the scenes stuff. Like, yeah, even like the games, the bits, it's all like, I like creating things for other people, letting them perform them. But there's also a side of me that likes to perform the things I actually work on. And that's really, aside from like my podcast, that's really like the main thing that I can actually like, oh, this is me. Like, I'm proud of this because no one really expects it from me either. So I think that's why I enjoy it so much.
No, I love that so much for you. It sounds like you found something that you're super excited and passionate about too. What is that writing process for you when you are writing jokes? What does that look like?
It looks like a note on my phone where anytime I have a random idea, I write it down. And then going back and like, oh, that is kind of funny. How could I turn that into an entire story? I write a bunch of little kind of chunks of the set and then try to connect them all, which is hard. So it's mainly random ideas, build them into a story, and then try to focus it and turn it into a set to where it all kind of flows together. So that's kind of what I do when I sit down and write.
Do you take any inspiration from things happening in your life, or is it from things that happen on the show? Where do you feel like most of your comedy is coming from?
I would say a lot of mine is from personal life. Like if my wife says something that's kind of funny, I think of, kind of going back to me always turning things into work, I think of how I can turn that into a joke or into a bit. When it comes to stuff from the show, I'll usually, because I also write with Bobby, so if he says something on the show that I think he could use, I'll make a note of that and write it for him to use. But I think with my stuff, it's just stuff that a lot of it is like internet stuff. Like I'll see people like, why did they post that? And I try to turn that into a joke. Or yeah, really just anything I hear, I always listen. And I think that's why kind of where a lot of my comedy comes from is since I am a quiet person, I'm always listening to people. And if I hear something funny that could be used later, I make a note.
That's amazing, because I also was going to ask, like, you being a super quiet individual, when you hit the stage, do you feel like a flip kind of switches in you? Or do you just feel like that's just a different side of you that's coming out?
I feel like I become somebody that I'm not anywhere else. It's almost like I remember it like growing up, like when I would play in bands, same kind of thing that I was so quiet at school. And then people would be like, you go and play shows on the weekend? That's weird. So I've kind of carried that over now into comedy of like right when I go out there, like I'm nervous right up into it. Like I'm a wreck. Like I get super nervous because I also have like just anxiety that I deal with, and I put myself into situations that feel uncomfortable, but I know that's where the good stuff comes out, because it is nerve-wracking to get in front of people and have to memorize everything, but not only just memorize it in a way that when you say it, it comes out the way you wanted it to, and it comes out like a joke. It doesn't just sound like you're just up there talking. So I'm really nervous leading up to it. I'll try to like listen to a song to calm me down, get me in the right headspace. But right when I get up there, it all kind of goes away, because you're there, you see the people, you feel good. You just feel happy being back there, that it feels like, yeah, something kind of just turns in me and it's time to perform. I do my set, come off, immediately feel like I did terribly and think of how I could do better next time. But I think it's that feeling of wanting to keep getting better at it that makes me want to do it again and again. But it is weird that I am a quiet person, and I wouldn't do those things in normal situations, that I always put myself in those where I have to be extrovert.
Do you think you will ever allow yourself to come off stage and be excited about what you did?
No, never. I've never felt good about it before. I think on the first tour I did with Bobby, by like the last two or three weekends of it, I felt like I had it down pretty good. And I would feel as proud as I could get about it, but it takes a long time to get to that point.
Yeah. But it sounds like you're doing amazing at it, and you feel really good about what happened this past weekend.
Yeah, weekend was good.
How long were you up on stage? How long was your opening set?
I introduced two people, each of the opening acts and then Bobby. So I did like 2 5-minute sets. And then the next show we'll do, I'll probably do like a straight 10.
How does that feel to talk for 10 minutes straight?
It feels like forever. That's the hard thing too, is when you are working on it, it's kind of like when you write a speech in high school or college.
Oh, worst classes ever.
Yeah. You think you have like 3 pages of stuff written, and you have to give like a, you know, 5-minute presentation, and you do the entire thing in like 2 minutes. So I always try to over account for what I need to do and be up there, because I get up there and everything just moves immediately fast. Mm-hmm. And you're just up there talking. And if something doesn't go over well, you have to keep going. And you're like, oh, wait, I didn't account for that. So 10 minutes feels probably like an hour.
You know, we were talking about before we had jumped up on this podcast, because I was recording the best bits, just the bit side of it. And we were talking about how hard it is to talk to yourself when you are up on stage. Does it feel like you're talking to yourself, or because you get some of that audience feedback, it doesn't feel that way?
I think because you get that audience feedback, it feels like you're hanging out with people. And then also, because the stage lights are so bright, you don't really see a whole lot of people outside of like the first row. So like, in a way, it feels kind of like you have like this comfort blanket of you don't see the people and how they're reacting. So I think that's what also makes it easier, is you're there but not looking at people straight in the face. Because if I see somebody not laughing the entire time, I can only focus in on that person.
Fair.
And I'm like, man, I really suck.
Oh, no. That has to be defeating, too, to feel that way in the middle of something when you're like, I probably still have 8 minutes left.
Yeah.
And now you have that feeling to deal with.
Yeah, that part's tough, especially on this last weekend where it was all new stuff. So I hadn't tested it out at all. And there was one time where I was like, I thought that would be a bigger moment, and it wasn't. So I just had to keep going.
Oh, yeah. You do have to be really good as a stand-up comedian, which is what I would call you. Is that what you would call yourself? You have to be really good at taking negative feedback. Not just not people saying bad things, but per se not laughing. And you just have to be like, okay, yep. Next one.
Yeah, that's the good thing about it, is you get immediate feedback. Yeah. And I don't really have to ask people what didn't work, because I know right after that, I got to take that out, I got to change that. So it's that instant type of reaction that is really powerful, because what we do in, you know, in radio and all the podcasts we have, sometimes we don't get that feedback immediately.
No, you get it on social media, and you it can be later. A whirlwind.
So yeah, it's kind of nice to have that, because it's the ultimate test. And if something doesn't get the laugh you were wanting, and even though you thought it was funny and you think it's the best thing ever, you kind of have to move on and be pretty harsh on yourself. And like, man, I guess not as funny as I thought.
That's amazing. It sounds like you did awesome this weekend too. So congratulations.
Thank you.
On another fun weekend and more projects that you have going on. I do want to find out too, because this week on the show at number two, I shared some personal news that I wasn't intending on sharing. It just kind of came out. And like I will mention on the best bits, is I'm just a really terrible liar and I'm an open book. So when I get asked about something, it just kind of falls out of me like word vomit. And then I'm like, well, it's out there now. And that's kind of what happened this week. But exciting personal news. So it's not bad. It's just I plan to keep it personal for a little bit longer. I did want to know if there was anything personal or exciting going on in your life that you want to share.
I think going back to earlier, we were talking about like parents. I think a personal change I'm trying to make lately is be more deliberate of spending time with my parents and calling my parents. I don't know. Maybe I've just been emo lately or in a weird headspace, but I've been thinking more and more about like my parents getting older, me getting older.
Same.
Yeah.
Why do you think, do you remember the life advice I gave where I was like, everything, time is passing?
It is. And I think it's because I'm in my 30s now. And I've been thinking like, my parents aren't going to be here forever. And I had this really weird thought the other day of like, someday I'm going to go to text my mom and she's not going to be there to reply to me. So I've been trying to make a personal change of when I am thinking of them, when I am thinking of calling them, make it a point to do so. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we are going home to Texas, and I just kind of want to like have real conversations with them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've really done that in a while, especially since I've moved to Nashville. And it feels like sometimes when I go home, it's kind of just like surface level stuff. So I feel like I want to have like that deeper connection with my parents again, just knowing that they won't be around for it. Not like they're dying tomorrow or anything, but it's just like, I would hate to look back and realize that I missed out on a lot of that or didn't take advantage of the time while they were here. So I think that's kind of what I'm working on right now.
You have a new perspective.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think your parents are going to appreciate as much as you are.
Yeah, I think so. I think they like miss me a lot and won't say it. I don't know. Maybe that's a parent thing of like all their kids are out on their own now and they like the time they get to spend now being just them. But it may feel weird for them. There's things I have like planned to talk to them about.
What? Okay. What do you plan to talk to them about?
I kind of just want to like be more appreciative of like them where they were at like my point in life is what kind of what I've been thinking about recently. Like when they were in their 30s, they already had all their kids and they were doing so much just to make sure we had enough to get by. And I think sometimes my parents in particular feel like they didn't do enough for me. And I feel like they feel guilty about the way we did grow up not having a whole lot. And I kind of just want to get that point across to them of like, it was all those things that kind of shaped me. And I wouldn't be the way I am now. I wouldn't be where I am now if I didn't grow up like that, so they don't have to feel guilty about it.
I, as much as it may be uncomfortable for a moment, I think they're going to appreciate it. Even if in that moment where they're just kind of like, okay, like, thanks, Mike. I think it's going to hit home for them more than they're going to show you. I do believe that.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't come out in that moment, I think our parents, you know, I saw something online that was more geared towards younger kids and teenagers, but our parents are humans too. They have feelings, they have emotions that we don't even know about, especially because they hide them half the time from us. And I do believe that hearing those things is never taken for granted. So even if it's a little weird or uncomfortable because it's not the normal thing you say, I think they're going to love it.
Oddly, it was like me watching the latest Elvis movie of like he was around the time that like my parents were born and kids. And for some reason was the first time I kind of like pinpointed where they were in their life. And if I was in the position that they are in now in my life, like, I don't think I could handle it like I did. Like having three kids that like being the age I am now, I don't know what I would do.
Right. And especially you look back on that too, because that when I shared that life advice, I was not kidding. I have been paying attention that time has passed. Not only have I seen it because my niece and nephew are growing up so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time I call, they've learned something new or there's something new going on in their lives. And it's like, I haven't even seen half the things happen because I'm not there. But my parents, when they are talking to me about their lives, and as I've gotten older and they're giving me advice and talking to me about things, I would picture my mom. I believe she was 30 when she had me. And right now I'm 28, about to turn 29. And I don't know that in a year I would have been ready to have a kid. And I was her fourth kid at that time. I don't even know that I'm ready to have one at the time that she had her fourth, which was me. Isn't that wild to think about how much the time has changed and the difference in just what's happened out into our world and the later on we are having kids and how that is changing, that it used to be so early on and now it's so much later. But it does put things in perspective of what our parents did and went through to have us and to enjoy us in their lives.
Yeah.
So I 100% love that you're doing that and think they are going to love it just as much.
Yeah, I think it'll be easier on my mom because she's a lot more like in touch with her emotions. I think with my dad, he's a tougher egg to crack just because he's like held everything back for so long. But I think with age, he's also gotten a little bit more emotional. So I think it'll be good for us.
I think it will. Even if he doesn't show any emotion, I think he'll be sitting there and it'll be inside. And then you leave and he will probably really feel it. And maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, you know, my dad's probably going to listen to this and a lot of parents out there, and they can flood your DMs with saying, yes, you should definitely share that. So I'm excited for you. That's going to be really fun for you guys.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Amazing. So, hey, Mike's reminding you, and I will remind you, tell your people you love them.
Because
life passes by a little bit too quickly. Even if it's not your parents, whoever it is, just people in your life, tell them you love them every day. And coming in at the number one spot, speaking of some serious love, Lunchbox is loving the fact that he is going to Las Vegas. He got his call back. He is going to be in a musical, which sounds so weird.
Very bizarre. What a plot line.
I don't think I ever thought those words would come out of my mouth.
No.
I did imagine maybe he'd be in a show or something, but musical was not what I had in mind.
But I think he's perfect for it.
I think he's going to be awesome. Yes. And so he's doing that. And that's what came in at the number one spot this week. But Mike, thank you so much for joining me and hanging out with me, opening up about what you've been thinking about and doing some movie trivia. That was fun too.
Yeah, this has been a good one.
Tell the people where they can find you, where they can hear you.
You can find me on all socials at Mike Destro, and you can listen to my podcast, Movie Mike's Movie Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Love that. And the show, if you want to check out more content, at Bobby Bones Show. Of course, BobbyBones.com has videos and blogs. It has all of the podcasts from the show listed up there. And I am at Webgirl Morgan if you want to follow me on all the socials. Mike, thanks again. Everybody, have a fabulous weekend. Love you. Bye. Bobby Bones
Show. Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.